My castaway this week is a pianist. She comes from Japan, but has made her name playing the great German masters, Bach, Beethoven, Schubert, and particularly Mozart. As a child, she was talented, but not a prodigy. It was only when her family moved to Vienna when she was 12 that she was able to immerse herself fully in the music she loved. She's won many prizes, although she attaches little importance to them. Meticulous, intellectual, and not a little enigmatic, her aim is always to keep faith with the composer whose work she's trying to interpret. She's lived in London for more than 20 years now, where she says, "Slowly, slowly, I feel I've become freer," which means I can give expression to what I've learned. She is Mitsuko Uchida. I've said, Mitsuko, that you weren't a child prodigy, but you were playing the piano at 3 years old, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, that's right. Well, there was something very peculiar about it. I cannot remember my first experiences with music, but I do remember the pieces I was playing at the age of four, the ones that I liked, even pre-4 years old, I think, because I remember playing a, for my ear now, rather nasty Burgmüller piece for children.
But
and
were
I
you
liked
taught?
One of them. Yes, I had a piano lesson at the age of 3 and a half, and that came because I'm the youngest of 3 children. And my older brother was having a piano lesson, and my mother claims that I started as answering his questions. And the piano teacher said, "Well, if the little one is more interested than this boy, why don't you give her, let her play the piano?" And so it started.
And did your parents then ask you to perform to friends and relations as they do?
Yes, my father particularly wanted me to play for friends and relations, which I loathed. There was a streak of professionalism in me. I wanted to play when I felt I was ready and not when they wanted me to. And that was such a struggle. And I nearly thought seriously about it, that I would stop playing the piano, because then I would not face this ghastly dilemma of having to play in front of people when a piece is that I think I'm not ready.
But do you enjoy performance these days?
I love it, but you know what I love it most? Sitting at home, playing the piano, listening to music, and playing oneself, which is even more beautiful than anything else. Even playing badly is such pleasure. But playing badly on stage is excruciating. So playing badly at home, that is the true moment of bliss.
How often do you play badly on stage?
Very often, I'm afraid. And then you regret.
But going back to that statement I quoted at the beginning, slowly, slowly, I feel I've become freer. Obviously, that implies that in the past you haven't been free. Is it, can I ask, just in some way, perhaps your Japanese upbringing that constrained you?
Oh, certainly so. I mean, Japanese upbringing is something quite different from you'd ever imagine in European or let alone American sort of way of life.
So that being taught the piano in Japan would have been one a method which was very sort of technical, mechanical.
Yes, it was deeply discouraged to love it. It was a kind of a duty and obligation, and duty it is not. So I remember as a child practicing the absolute minimum, because people sort of objected the moment you were enjoying yourself so much, and you ought to be practicing. Oh, goodness me, how can a child cope with that? So I must have had quite a good memory as a child already in terms of music. So my teacher never knew how little I practiced, because I produced sort of stuff, sort of felt I played in front of her as if I'd been practicing a lot, but I didn't. And I just, every now and then I think about it. Would I have been born elsewhere and had a different exposure to music? What would have become of me? I would probably have been much more advanced at an early age. But life is never ideal, and life is what you make out of. And anyway, I can't complain too much.
Tell me about your first record.
Well, the first choice, under any circumstance, if I were given only one choice, I would take this one and cry my eyes out that I'm leaving everything else behind. And that one record or recording would be the Bach's solo cello suites, played by Pablo Casals. Thank you.
part of the last movement, the Gigue, of Bach's Cello Suite No. 1 in G major, played by Pablo Casals. There's no real Japanese tradition of music in the Western sense, Mitsuko.
No, it is very different indeed. Of course, every culture has folk music, which rather beautiful and poignant. Some of the Japanese, particularly slow, sort of melancholic folk songs I love. And of course, lullabies and all that.
But nothing in the Western sense of our choral tradition,
none of that.
But in your house, it was different, because in your house, there was Furtwängler and Blech conducting the Berlin Philharmonic.
That's true, yes. Well, that was because my father was in the diplomatic service, and he spent something like 20 years of his life in Germany, or German-speaking countries. And he was in the 30s in Germany, and throughout the Second World War, he spent in Berlin. And Berlin was a center of musical events. And he loved opera. And was subscriber to the Philharmonic Concerts and the opera. He, some ingenious record company, started sending the new releases to the subscribers of the Philharmonic or the opera house. He got them. He was never bothered to return. So 4 weeks later, he got the bill and paid up. So it is not that he collected, but he inadvertently landed with masses of 78s.
Which he brought home to Japan.
He did. And my mother strangely rescued them through the war, which is a very strange thing to do.
But they never played them, your parents?
Hardly. But apparently my mother listened to it a lot when she was very lonely during the war.
But did you then, as a small girl, who was obviously, as you said, very good girl, did you get them out and play them?
We got them out, we children, got them out, and virtually everything I can remember was vocal music. Folk songs, or some Schubert that I didn't know that it was Schubert, some Schumann that I didn't know it was Schumann.
But you liked it?
I loved them.
Tell me about your second record.
Well, it is my great love, which is Franz Schubert. No, he's the composer whose music I would like to be playing when I die. And one of the central pieces of music by Schubert is the Winterreise.
Ich träumte von bunten Blumen, so wie sie wohl blühen im Mai. Ich träumte von grünen Wiesen, von lustigem Vogelgeschrei, von lustigem Vogelgeschrei. Und dass die Hähne krähten, da wacht mein Auge wach, da war es kalt und finster, es schrie die Raben am Dach. Da war es kalt und finster, es schrie die Raben am Dach.
Part of Frühlingstraum from Schubert's Winterreise, performed by Benjamin Britten and Peter Peers. Your family then, Mitsuko, moved to Vienna when you were 12 years old. Your father was made Japanese ambassador there.
Correct.
Could you speak any German at all?
Not a word, and I found it extremely difficult. Because don't give me that the children learn quickly, that sort of rubbish. Not at all. It depends on child and child, probably, and frame of mind and all that. I found it much easier when I was 23 or so and started learning English, because that was the first time that I really started to speak English in some form or another.
But then you already knew a European language, knowing
yes,
German,
exactly.
So that would have been
easy. That makes a huge difference.
But that initial transition from Japan to Austria
was horrendous.
Traumatic.
It was horrendous. And if then the psychoanalysis and all that would have been trendy, wow, would I have needed a psychoanalysis indeed, child psychologist.
Well, you're in the right place.
Yes, but then nobody in Vienna talked about it. It's quite interesting because Vienna is a world which is very claustrophobic. And Schoenberg, Freud, whoever, all the important people, they all got out. And then one day, when they're very, very important, they re-import them.
That's what
I think.
At what point did you feel you were in the right place? Because eventually you were to decide to stay there, weren't
well,
you?
Well, when I was 16 and my father went elsewhere, that was the moment of truth in my life. And I thought to myself, if I followed my father, out of me would be probably a nice, friendly, quite good, nice piano player, who is the nice daughter, and I don't know what. But I shall never be a professional. And so I decided I shall give it a go. But also at the same time, I love to read and I wanted to study. And if somebody would have thrown something interesting at me, I may have said, no, then I'm going to study philosophy or something crazy. You never know.
But you gave a public recital at quite already, an early age, didn't
at, you? Yes, at 14, a full recital, which was my official debut probably.
What did you play?
I played Bach, a Bach toccata, and then I played Beethoven Sonata, Opus 10, number 2, I remember, and then I played some Debussy, a group of Debussy, and the B minor Sonata of Chopin. So fairly large sort of program, and I was 14.
It was quite ambitious for 14
years. Yeah, but it was not necessarily that I chose the program. My teacher probably devised it.
But and where was this?
It was in Vienna, in the Brahmsaal. And I remember him asking me that the week after my recital, when I went to the school for the lesson, he said, "Now you know you are going to be a pianist, don't you?" And I said, "No." And he was furious.
So you hadn't enjoyed the performance?
I did. But for me, there was. It is very strange. It says probably more about me than about the fact whether I loved music or not. But to me, it was clear that I could not say I want to be a musician because I did not know what it took to be a musician. I love music. That is not yet a justification to be a musician, I thought.
Tell me about your third record.
Brahms Piano Concerto No. 2 in B flat. And the performer, the pianist, is Edwin Fischer, whom I have adored over the years. He has got some purity in his playing that touches me, whatever he plays. And the conductor is Wilhelm Furtwängler. So this is the two great loves of mine put together for one great, great piece of music. So it is a public performance.
The opening of Brahms Piano Concerto No. 2, played by Edwin Fischer with the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Wilhelm Furtwängler. You, let's talk about Mozart for a moment. You didn't much care for the way you were taught him, did you, in Vienna?
Well, it was very difficult. Probably everything that I was taught, I found was difficult. And probably that, again, is my problem, because I always disliked the way I played. And I tried to play more beautifully or to understand what I was doing and to get closer to the music. And most of the time I disliked it. So that is why I have kept on playing the piano ever since, to play a notch better every day.
I disliked
the sound I produced. So therefore I tried to produce a sound that I liked.
But I hope you like it these days.
Sometimes.
But I think, am I right in thinking that you found the approach to Mozart again much too rigid, much too conservative?
Yes, I found it very rigid indeed. And
so did it put you off playing Mozart?
No, not at all, but I still kept playing him or studying him, but more of, I have played more Beethoven, more Debussy, and so on, and a lot of masses of Chopin.
I must ask you, you very memorably in 1985 performed the complete cycle of Mozart's concerti, conducting them as well from the piano,
the keyboard, yeah.
Much acclaimed. It must have been very tough going, nevertheless.
Oh, yes. It is both tough and riveting. what happens is that the orchestra players would be compelled to listen to you, because a lot of the time, when my hands are at the keyboard, the players have to just to listen. And that has got a wonderful effect on an orchestra, provided it is a chamber group that which is used to playing with the ears and not playing with the eyes.
But you also, of course, if you haven't got a conductor, you'd have eye contact from the piano with
Absolutely.
The orchestra.
Absolutely. With the orchestra, you look at each other, you listen to each
that
other.
That must be nicer.
Oh, that is wonderful. That is what is what chamber music is all about. And that is ultimately what I like doing. Almost the best is playing with somebody else. So chamber music and accompanying voices, I love doing that.
Without the conductor in between?
Nobody else in between, and not completely alone either, that you make music together with somebody.
Record number four.
That, of course, had to be Mozart. I think when I heard some of the Kleinborn performances conducted by Fritz Busch, I discovered that is really closer to the way I would wish to hear Mozart. So if I were to choose one opera, then it is actually Così fan tutte. It is the most Mozartian in the way that it is so human, completely unjudgmental. Judgmental is, for example, Beethoven. For him, virtue is important. Strength of humanity is important. Human beings are to be free. All that is important. These are virtues and concepts. Mozart is a man for whom those things are not that important. He just sees the humans as they are, with their weaknesses. And he personally was certainly a person with enormous amount of weaknesses. But he did not go around saying, no, I'm going to convert, therefore. But he looked at all of those elements, those human elements and human relationships, and wrote the most moving and sublime music. So it is a human expression, a human weakness included. And so therefore I love it. And Così is about that.
Part of the quintet from Act One of Mozart's Così fan tutte, sung by Senna Jurinak, Blanche Thiebaum, Erich Kunz, Richard Lewis and Mario Bariello, with the Kleinborn Festival Orchestra conducted by Fritz Busch. There was a long, slow period in your career, Mitzko.
And it is still. It is a long, slow matter. And I want it to be a long, slow process until the end.
But that's because that's how you like it now. But I'm talking about the part before you really achieved recognition.
Yes.
How difficult was it? I mean, did you starve in the proverbial garret? Or?
Not quite, but I lived a very frugal life, and which, in a way, I still do. So because life has not changed that dramatically. Now I have to stay in expensive hotels to protect myself when I'm performing. But otherwise, I still have no cars. I don't drive. That I don't own a television, that is out of my preference. But I don't need a Rolls Royce. I don't need to have a private jet. I don't need to have a big villa somewhere.
How many pianos do you need to have?
Ah, that's a different story. I want many, however many are.
How many have you got?
At the moment, but I have got one small one in Tokyo, with still in my parents' house. That was the first piano that my father bought me. Then the first piano I bought myself at the age of 17, that was a small Bösendorfer, which I still kept. Two concert grand Steinways. Those two are necessity of life for me. And I have another Steinway elsewhere, and then a small Longman and Broadrip 1790s. That is a square small piano on which I have tried to play lots of Mozarts and Haydns.
Which is your favourite?
Well, I would say my older Steinway concert grand. He is, well, I call it, well, I always say, my pianos are always he. So he is very personal and very interesting. His expression is something so rich that I have loved that instrument best of all these years.
How physical a business is it playing the piano? And how, and presumably it differs between composers as to what you put into it physically.
Yes, a lot. And it is very physical as well as very mental and emotional, spiritual. But the physical aspect is enormous.
But you physically, I mean, which composer do you use to put your shoulders into it, as it were?
Or what, for example, you have to, there are the extremes. One composer like Mozart and Chopin, there is one line, Mozart, Chopin, Debussy, those people do not like the weight on in the sound, that as I hear it.
No shoulders.
No shoulders, and no even the weight of the arm. I have very light bones. Still, I have to be careful with the weight. But the people like Brahms, you really, Virgil, I have to sit on the keyboard, otherwise the sound is wrong. It sounds too light. And Beethoven, lots of shoulders and energy and woof, you see.
Attack.
Yes.
Record number 5.
Yes, and there we come to Beethoven. His central, most concentrated and purest form of his composition, I still think, were the string quartets. And I still end up, after having listened to lots of wonderful performances, when it comes to slow movements of Beethoven's string quartets, nobody actually surpasses Busch and his quartet.
Part of the slow movement of Beethoven's string quartet, Opus 132, played by the Adolf Busch Quartet. You came to London, Mitsko, when you were 24, after 12 years in Vienna, and you've been here ever since. I suppose that makes you a European, really, now.
Well, in many ways. Well, it is very strange. Wherever I come back from, whether it is Japan or America or so, and I read sort of the air space of Europe, and I look down and think, oh, I'm back in Europe. And that the feeling is I'm back.
Home.
Yes, home.
How are you regarded in Japan in that case?
Strange.
But from what you said, you always were strange.
Yes, certainly. I was certainly and thoroughly strange under any circumstance, but I'm becoming probably stranger by the day. And also linguistically, it is very strange because Japanese is a language used in order to agree. And I prefer to use the language, if possible, to try to clarify my thoughts, because music, in a way, everybody tells you music is the language without language. But even in music, you do need certain keywords, and to express yourself and to formulate a thought, you do need a sentence. So you do need grammar, and then clarifying is very important for me in order to use the music as well as the language.
But London is your home, your base. It's where you keep your bicycle.
That is where I keep my music, my books, all my music and all my books.
And those you use all of the time to prepare. You study. You do fewer concerts, I think, fewer performances than many other professional
musicians.
Many
people probably so, because I simply say, because I am not as clever as most, I want, and also I want to have the time to enjoy music Without having to be exposed.
But it's also part of your being meticulous, isn't it? You screwed your nose up when I said meticulous in the introduction. It's not a criticism, is it?
No, no. But, of course, because first encounter is the most emotional moment anyway. And then the last encounter is also that. In between are all these different phases. And you want to, and I need time. I need time to even, but of course, listen to music, certainly, which takes time, but also just dreaming. I need time to dream, doing nothing, listening to nothing, just even looking out of the window or sitting in the dark and just dreaming. Without it, somehow I get stuck. So I take the time off to, well, to do nothing.
Next piece of music.
Now, we come to, again, to Johann Sebastian Bach, which I'm afraid he is very important to me. But also the performer who plays this piece of music is very important to me, possibly one of the most significant instrumentalists in my life. He is a violinist. Thank God that he was a violinist, because I may have got too influenced by him. Would he have been a pianist? He is called Józef Szigeti. He was a Hungarian violinist. And Szigeti's approach of absolute honesty and clarity and himself in service of music, that is as I wish I could be as a performer.
The opening of Bach's Violin Sonata No. 3 in C major, played by Józef Szigeti. It has to be said, another beautiful piece of music, but should we reveal that you did consider having Winnie the Pooh in this list?
Yes, as number 8, as my luxury. I thought I would love to hear Winnie the Pooh, because I have got the luxury of being read out loud, which I love. And Winnie the Pooh, the more it snows, diddly pom, sung out of tune was what I wanted. But no recorded music is out of tune, so I abandoned it.
Well, this is how your friend sings it to you.
Yes.
So we get Schubert instead, but anyway. Yeah. Tell me about your hands. Do you worry about them?
No, not excessively. Not at all. They are not insured. And I do everything when I cook, which I don't do very often or much, but I use knives, everything. And I ride bicycle with gloves, mind you, but still, that's it.
But they're very strong, I can see. And are they double-jointed?
Yeah, some of the fingers are double-jointed. And that is very oriental thing. So in a way, physically, I am built very Japanese. The bones are very thin and very flexible.
I've always thought it must be a very lonely life, being an international concert pianist. All that travelling, formula, hotel rooms, where you can't play music to yourself.
Living out of a suitcase, it's very lonely. But then, when we come down to it, every human being is ultimately lonely. So it is slightly exaggerated, but that's life.
How do you pass the time, though, if you're sitting in one of these hotel bedrooms, you know, and you're performing in 2 hours' time. What do you do?
Then, if it were in 2 hours' time, I would just have eaten a cake or something sweet to go through the sugar goes through my blood. I may have even licked huge spoonfuls of honey and drank masses of tea, and then playing through the music through my head. I may be moving my hands and fingers, but I will be probably immersing myself in the music.
And before that, I mean, if it were earlier than the 2 hours before, how do you stay calm in anticipation?
Well, that is very difficult. I wish somebody tells me how to do it, and we somehow manage. But when I'm away, when I'm playing a concert in some town, I would probably go automatically into a museum, because that is a place where you can really look at things that are beautiful, make discoveries, and even be inspired. Even for that particular piece of music that you are playing, there may be a link between a Rembrandt picture and a Beethoven concerto, for example.
Record number 7.
Well, so this is the choice. Instead of the Tiddly-Pom, I'm afraid I have chosen the most obvious. That is Schubert String Quintet in C major. And the reason why many people choose this piece is quite simple, because this piece is one of the last major pieces of music that Schubert had composed. For me, these are the manifestations of his life, about his coming to terms with death. And the C major quintet, it is not about coming to terms with death or life or whatever, suffering, no, none of the problems. That's all gone. If death were this, it would be so wonderful.
Part of the slow movement of Schubert's String Quintet in C major, played by Isaac Stern, Alexander Schneider, Milton Catims, Pablo Casals, and Paul Tortelier. As we've said, Mitzko, you're mistress of all Mozart compositions for the piano. You've recorded much of Schubert, Debussy, Schoenberg. What are your big musical ambitions? What composers, what pieces do you want to master still?
Well, everything and everybody, if possible. And I am struggling with Beethoven a lot at the moment, and I am dwelling in Schubert. But I have been dwelling in Schoenberg recently. But my ambition, one of the great ambitions of my life, is when should I be allowed to turn 70? You never know how long you live and so. But I am aiming at celebrating my 70th birthday, or the 70th year, with the 48 Preludes and Fugues of Johann Sebastian Bach.
In public?
Yes, that I shall do in public.
And otherwise, you enjoy it?
Yes, I hope so. Otherwise, I play at home.
Tell me about your last record.
So we are returning to the central issue, which is, again, Johann Sebastian Bach. I wanted to take something that was some choral music, so I shall certainly take the St. John's Passion, performed by the English Chamber Orchestra and conducted by Benjamin Britten.
My dearest Savior,
John Shirley Quirk singing My Dearest Saviour from Bach's St. John Passion with the Wandsworth Schoolboys Choir and the English Chamber Orchestra conducted by Benjamin Britten. Now, I normally would ask you now which one of those eight, but I think you've told us, haven't you, if you could only take one, it would be the Pablo Casals.
It is going to be Pablo Casals playing the cello suites. Mm. Although I shall cry that I'm not having a cigarette on me, for example, and everything else. You know what? It took me not to take the unfinished symphony of Schubert. Oh, God. And everything else. There is so much. But there you are.
What about your book? You know, we give you the complete works of Shakespeare and we give you the Bible, too.
Great. Now, you never know how long I'm going to be on the desert island. So one compromise solution I found was that I would take War and Peace, Tolstoy. But in that double version, that ideal version, that on the one side there is Russian, the other side is the perfect English translation. And by the end of several years on the desert island, I shall have learned Russian.
And can there be any doubt at all about what your luxury is?
None at all, because I was told firmly that pianos don't grow on those desert islands. So mine is always my piano.
Mitsuko Uchida, thank you very much indeed for letting us hear your desert island discs.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.